3, 2, 1. Boom, and we're live.
What's happening, Joe?
What's up, Mike? Tom Segura is in the house for a few minutes here, too. Yeah, stop by to say hi. I can't believe you've never had a cup of coffee.
Never.
You want some?
No.
That might be no. That might be the most outrageous thing about you, is that you've never had coffee.
Your whole life,
never had coffee. No.
Did you just...
Tea, never coffee.
No one ever offered you a cup of coffee?
No.
You never went to Starbucks?
Never. No, for tea or some donuts.
Wow.
What about like a...
Those when you, when I was in, when you're in rehab, you always gotta go to Starbucks because the meeting's right outside of Starbucks. You always hang out at Starbucks.
Right.
But never for coffee.
You didn't want to try it?
Never.
That is that. How about like girlfriends, wives? Like none of them ever drank coffee at home?
I'm sure they have, but I never really. My wife drinks it.
And you just nothing?
Never.
Nothing. No, no. Well,
I'm so addicted to coffee.
All the stuff I did and all the drugs I did, you'd think coffee would be nothing.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like it doesn't make any sense. When did you first try any drugs?
Kid.
When you were a kid?
9 years old.
What kind of shit?
Smoking and drinking.
Right.
Then as I got older, I tried acid.
How old were you when you first tried acid?
Probably 11.
Wow.
Yeah, real young.
Jesus, man.
Wow, that's real young. Wow. But when you were the champ, when you were in your prime, like when you beat Trevor Burbick, were you doing anything back then?
Just drinking a lot.
Drinking a lot? Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Would you go clean for camp or...
Like yes, for camp. Yes.
Just for camp.
Yes, for camp.
Yeah, but outside, like once fight's over, and yeah, so, yeah.
I'm an animal.
Wild,
yeah.
You were the first guy that I ever used as an example of to break that old myth that you can't have sex before fights. And I was like, well, that's out the window.
For sure.
Because you would talk about it all the time. You'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Your logic made sense, too. You're like, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to be thinking about sex. I'll just get it out of the way.
Yeah, and it's over with. You don't have to do it. You have you refuel for the next 6 weeks and just go with your fight.
Do you think that was a myth that it made you weak?
Yeah, I think it's a myth.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make sense.
It seems odd, yeah. And then, whenever there's the Olympics.
That would inspire you more so than, you know, disintegrate you.
Yeah.
I would think.
They said that the Olympic, you know, where the athletes stay is just like fuck fest.
Oh, of course.
Just
I would think so, yeah. They have the boys and the girls in the same vicinity. Yeah, it would
also,
be really
probably
crazy.
You want to alleviate some anxiety.
Anxiety.
Freaking out. You're at the Olympics. You know, you're 18 years old. You're like,
and everyone's in amazing shape.
Yeah. Stressed out.
Yeah. When you were first coming up and when you were first, when you were Kid Dynamite on Sports Illustrated, I'll never forget that, man. That was that your era from like, you know, the 80s, the late 80s, that era, like, it was a big part of my youth. You know, like, you being the champ, it was like, it was a change of things. Because when Larry Holmes was the champ, as a boxing fan, I loved Larry Holmes. Like, there's that cover. You were 19 years old,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's nuts.
When Larry Holmes was a champ, as a boxing fan.
Wow, you still got that stuff, man?
You can still get those.
Yeah.
Sports Illustrated. It's the internet. You can find it on the internet. That's how Jamie got it. I had that Sports Illustrated. But when Larry Holmes was a champ, as a boxing fan, I appreciated him. I knew he was a great fighter. We would get together with friends and watch like the Michael Spinks fight with Larry Holmes when Spinks beat him for the title. It was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal culturally.
Yeah.
Like, people didn't care as much. But then you came around. And when you came around, all of a sudden, everybody's watching heavyweight boxing. If heavyweight boxing wasn't boring again. It was the most crazy, exciting thing in sports. When your fights would go on, it would be about, should I pay for this? Because how long is this going to last? Like, that had never existed.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. People tell me about that all the time. They all chipped in and they turn the fight on this whole way. I never think about it like that, you know. Sometimes when it comes to my... realization of the situation, I forget that I'm that guy. I forget that I trained that hard and I became a fighter and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, does it seem like a dream?
Yeah, pretty much like a blur.
Because I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be 19 years old, 20 years old, to be that fucking famous.
It was a trip.
Who can handle that? Can anybody handle that?
No, it was a trip, but it was just what Custom Model, you know, that was his blueprints to make me this teenage superstar.
Did he give you advice on how to handle pressure and fame?
Oh, the pressure and everything, but, you know, he says really no ingredients on how to handle fame. You know what I mean? We have to see what Department of Fame is your problem, and we have to work on that issue from there. But no one knows how to go conduct themselves under that kind of pressure.
No, I couldn't imagine.
It's the level of fame too. Yes. It's like there's so many. You realize there's so many levels of fame, and then Mike's is still just extraordinary. Where like people walk away from their job, like in an airport. They're supposed to be at the cash register and they run out. You know, they leave their job to go say hi. That's not, you know, most of the time you're like, oh, that's who that person is. It's a totally different thing.
How weird is that?
That's pretty weird. It took time for me to get used to that stuff. I used to be one of those, get the fuck away from me, man. What are you doing, you creep? You know what I mean? Because I never knew how to conduct myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, Mike, come here. Take a picture of my mother. Take a picture of my kid. Take a picture here. Take a picture here. I love you. This and that. I'm like, whoa, dude. Cool out. You know what I mean? But now, you know, I understand this is just what it is. It is what it is. And you're not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah, I've seen you at the UFC before. You're very calm around people. When people grabbing at you, want to take pictures, you just relax.
The UFC is awesome because everybody's nuts.
Yeah, that's it's definitely a wild environment.
What do you think Khabib's going to do now?
What I think? Who? Khabib?
Yeah.
Well, he does whatever the fuck he wants to do. That's what I think. I think that guy's probably the best lightweight of all time. He's a monster.
Incredible.
I think he's probably going to have some fights at 170 pounds eventually, if I'd imagine. At 155, there's good fights for him. Tony Ferguson's a great fight for him. I'm really interested in seeing that. I'm really interested in seeing him going up. I'm really interested in seeing him fight at 170 pounds.
Who's up there for him to fight?
Well, first of all, Tyron Woodley, who's the champ at 170, that would be an insane fight. George St. Pierre, if he decided to come back and make a big super fight, that would be an insane fight. I think 170 has a lot of opportunities for him. But I think 155 does too. They just have to figure out who's going to fight him. He's an international superstar now. You know, Khabib, especially the way he smashed Conor. Conor's such a superstar already that the way Khabib won and did it so dominant, I think he's through the roof now. I think when he comes back and people see the pay-per-view numbers of his fights, they're going to realize how huge this guy is because he's so interesting. He's very humble, he's very polite, very well-spoken, very religious guy, lives with his family. Lives with his parents. Mm-hmm. Lives with his parents and his family, I believe.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not speaking out of school. I believe that's true. And obviously, he doesn't have to for money. I mean, he's rich as shit now.
Yeah.
But he's just a monster. Best grappler I've ever seen inside the 155-pound division. He just smashes people.
What do you think about John Jones, though?
In what way?
In his skills.
He's phenomenal.
It's incredible.
The best ever at using distance. He knows distance better than anybody. He's a master at knowing when he can hit you and you can't hit him.
Yeah, I miss watching him fight. You know what I mean? He's not fighting as much anymore.
He's back. He just won. Just won the title again. Just fought Alexander Gustafsson.
Yeah?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
For vacant title?
It was Daniel Cormier relinquished his title. And it was like, it's weird. Right? Like Cormier is the champ because John Jones tested positive for something, so they stripped him, and then Cormier became the champ. It's, I think they'll probably fight again, whether they fight again at heavyweight or light heavyweight.
Really?
Yeah, I think Cormier and John Jones. Cormier wants to, he wants to keep going. But he says he wants to retire soon. He's 40, you know?
Yeah.
He still looks good, though.
He looks great, especially at heavyweight.
Yeah,
at heavyweight, he doesn't have to cut weight. He's got so much strength and just so agile. He's such an unbelievable wrestler, too. I mean, his wrestling skill, his skill level and understanding of wrestling is so high. It's so above most people.
Anybody he fight outside of John Jones, he dominated.
Yeah, him. Yeah. That's how good John is. Yeah. John's that good. He's that good. I mean, it just sucks that he's had so many controversies in his life, but I'm hoping he puts all that shit behind him. Have you ever spoken with him about that?
Yeah, never about his personal life or anything, but we met before and talked.
But you're a guy who's gone. I mean, when you went through legal problems yourself, you overcame. You came out of it on the other end. I think would think a guy like him could benefit a lot from talking
but,
to a guy.
Yeah, you know,
but
it's just so difficult and it's so unfortunate that he has to go through something like that. You know?
Do you think so?
Yes, it's really unfortunate, you know, because sometimes people, they don't survive situations like that.
Because they're so wild and they're having a good time too much and they're partying, end of the champ.
It has to come to an end. That stuff, if you don't bring it to an end, it's gonna come to its own end. It might not like that way it ends.
Yeah. So you think for a guy like him, maybe getting in trouble was a good thing?
If only if you learn from experiences like that, you know?
I think I
was just a wild guy. I was really a wild guy. I look at myself now and I say to myself, when I spent all those trips in those psych wards and stuff, I said, what was that all about? What was wrong with me back then? You know?
Yeah.
And I was really disturbed back then.
But you're somebody who got to the point where you got, like, it's really fascinating because I know, you're a public figure. Mm-hmm. So, I've been able to watch you my whole life. You went through all that stuff and then you got to this point where you're very self-reflective. You are able to comment on it. Most people, regardless of whether they're famous or not, just still don't get to that point where they're able to look back and examine who they were and doing wild shit. And
with ruthless honesty.
Yeah. That's what's so great.
You have to reflect on yourself to discover who you really are.
Yeah. When you're 20 years old and all of a sudden you're the heavyweight champion of the world, just a few years ago you were poor. And now all of a sudden you're the king of the world.
That's really crazy. You know, so young, it's really crazy. I was unable to handle it. I wasn't expecting that. That was a really sucker punch right there.
Charlie Murphy.
That's a real sucker punch right there. I wasn't ready for that one.
Charlie Murphy told us a story, and it's animated. It's on YouTube now. Of you and him coming over your house in a limousine, and you had was it a lion or a tiger?
Tiger. See, he must have been a lion, but yeah, the tiger.
Dude.
It is one of the craziest fucking stories.
For people that don't know, I got to hang out with you at one of my shows one time, and it was a great, I had the best time talking to you about everything. What made you think you could get a tiger? Like, how did that even happen?
I'm in prison at the time. So I'm in prison. I'm talking to my car dealer at the time, and he has some cars that belong to a friend of mine. That's both a friend of ours, and he's discussing if he doesn't pay for these cars, I'm gonna sell these cars to somebody and get some horses and stuff. I said, "What? You can get horses and trade horses in for cars?" Because I had a lot of cars. So I said, "I'll probably get some horses too." And he said, "Yeah, man, you get cougars, lions, tigers. I know this guy got exotic." I said, "You do? Can you get me some tigers?" He said, "Yeah." And the guy told me, and the guy said, "Man, imagine how cool that'd be. You'd be, because I had a bunch of fancy cars. Imagine that, man, you'd be in an Aston Martin or a Ferrari, and you have a tiger right next to you, man. That would be so awesome." And I'm a young guy, I'm in prison, I'm saying to myself, "Wow, that would be cool, right?" I said, "Yeah, get me some cubs, man."
Oh,
and then
when
I came home, I had those cubs right there waiting for me.
So you raised them as cubs?
Yeah.
Because that's how you were, because I would see footage of you, like, fucking smacking them around and jumping on one of your tigers, and I was like, holy shit.
Oh, no, I had them since they were babies. I had their mothers. Their mothers, wow. Since they were babies.
Now, did it ever get, this is a crazy picture, you in your underwear with a tiger on a chain. That is one of the,
that's the champ right there.
That's you at peak crazy.
Yeah, insane.
Yeah.
Tom, what was going through my mind?
Yeah.
I don't know what made me think about, my friend said, "Mike, you can get some awesome animals." And I'm saying, "Really? Are you serious?" I said, "Really, I'm going to get some horses."
Everybody does it, though. That was one of the things about, what's his face from Narcos?
Oh, Pablo Escobar.
Pablo Escobar.
He got like a fucking zoo. Escobar
had a whole crazy zoo. They all do it.
Once you get like that rich, you're like, just get some animals.
Yeah, you want to fuck with some animals. Let's get some animals. Fuck these people. Let's get some animals. And they throw people in there with the lions and tigers, huh?
Yeah.
Get in there, you motherfucker.
It's a real common thing with like super rich people. They start getting lions and tigers and shit.
Michael Jackson had all that stuff,
that's
too.
That's right. Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson and everything. Yeah, they... Neverland, too. Hugh Hefner had like a zoo in his backyard.
That's true. Yeah.
But he had weird shit, like weird birds.
Yeah.
I don't think, maybe he had a monkey or something.
He did have weird shit.
Nothing dangerous.
I hung up there before at the Playboy Mansion. This is at the end of his career. It was like in, what was it, 10 years ago or something? It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that guy, man, what a life he lived.
Hugh?
Yeah.
Oh. In his pajamas.
They're sucking his balls and he's 80 and shit.
Oh,
they're like,
oh,
deep
no.
Into his 80s. Deep into his 80s.
Deep, yeah.
Even his 90s.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
He really, here's the thing, that dude lived the lifestyle he was talking about. You know, a lot of people talk shit and you're like, you don't really do that. He was really doing it, man.
Oh, he was really
doing it. If I start living that lifestyle, I'll be dark. I start getting dark, you know? You can have a little, that's just amazing.
Too much, too much.
Wait, one other thing, I got to, because I got to run, and I wanted,
Where you going, man?
I got to go meet the wife, man.
They'll do it.
I read one time, because, all right, so for people that know, I met Mike on a flight, and it was a surreal experience. You know, like from being a kid and thinking like, this is Superman. That's what I thought as a kid. It's just, you know what I mean? Like seeing those, when you see it as a kid too, I think it's different. Like you're just like, whoa, that is so nuts. Like these 11 second knockouts and shit.
And you know what's so bizarre? Periodically, even to this day, people come up to me and talk about the experience that they saw him and he talked about meeting me. And said, is that true?
All the time,
it's
right?
It's on a special. It's on
people mostly stories.
Me, is that true?
Yeah, mostly stories.
You really meet him?
And it was a surreal experience, and you know, we spoke on the plane, and then like when I thought we were done talking, you know, I faced forward, and then he came back and like tapped me on the shoulder. I was like, oh shit! Like Mike's talking to me. I'm down here like seatbelted in. But then we land, and he was like, oh, where's your show? And I go, oh, here, it's here. I give him the number. Never expect to hear. Hits me up the next day, and he's like, we're coming to your show. And I was like, oh my God. And I really did say, like, I'm amazed that you're coming. And he said, it's all love. And I just said, I love you. Because I didn't know what to say. And then
that was good.
And he's like,
cool.
He's like, all right, man. And then I have the phone. And then I remember I called the Pittsburgh improv manager, and I go, hey man, I just go, you're not gonna believe this, but Tyson's coming to the fight tonight. He goes, Mike Tyson? I go, no, fucking Tyson Chicken. Yeah, Mike Tyson's coming tonight. He's like, I'll corridor off a whole thing. And, you know, and I didn't know he was at the show because the show had already started and I didn't see him arrive. When we go back to the green, after the show, I walk off stage and he grabs me and he goes, let's go to the green room. So he took me to my green room, right? Like he was like, and I was like, fuck yeah. And we hung out in that green room over an hour. And just shooting the shit and talking. And when I forgot, like the time had passed, I opened the door. The entire staff is lined up at the door to meet him. Like that's the effect that he has on the group, you know? Wow. Like they're waiting in a line for an hour outside the green room. And like, you know, we talked about boxing, about life. It was fascinating. One of the things I really appreciated about you as a fighter was like that you really knew that you were putting on a show. So that's something that I feel like I miss. You know, there's no one that put on the show the way you did. Like you knew that people bought tickets and paid for the pay-per-view. And then it's still like one of my great memories, man. It was a thrill to meet you. So I just wanted to stop by and say hi.
Sounds like you're wrapping it up.
He has to go.
I do, I do. Oh, by the way, did you buy 7 Bentleys that were the same color?
No, but I bought around 7 Bentleys before.
Damn.
They're Rolls Royces.
I wanted to ask.
But you did give away one when you crashed it, right?
Yeah, let me tell you that story. I wish I had some time. I was married at the time to Robin Givens, and we were in some fast food joint. We were ordering food, and she went in my pocket, I guess, to get some money out of my pocket to pay for it, and she saw some condoms came out, and she was mad, so she got in the car, and then boom, she crashed the car into another car that was just parked there. Boom, and she hit somebody, and she hurt their arm. And then the cops came. And so the cops came, and the cops were saying, hey, what happened here, right? And I was afraid that they were going to arrest me or arrest her. So I said, well, nothing happened, officer. Nothing. And then it was the guy with a broken arm. I said, you know, sir, why don't you just take the car? You know, you deserve it because you've been doing a lot. Because I didn't want to get arrested. I didn't have a license or anything. Right. And I didn't want my wife to get in trouble. I said, why don't you just take it? You know, maybe it was around 230 at the time. So why don't you just take it? It'd be okay. And the guy said, hey, don't tell me that. And then once he said that, I said, got him. I said, I got him. And I said, hey, man, take it, man. Do this, man. You deserve this. Take it. And they took it.
Wow.
But before that, some guy's arm was broken, and I gave him my money. I said, I'll take the money. And then he came back to the police. My arm is better. Captain, now you get away from me. I'm not going to tell you to get away from me no more because he didn't want to mess this deal up with this car because the guy complained he ain't not going to get this car.
That's hilarious.
So the cops said, don't fucking come near me again.
That you hear is me? Hilarious.
So the guy just backed off, and I say, "Go ahead, man. I'll see you later." And I took off with my wife. I didn't want us to get in trouble.
But they made him give away the car, right? They made him.
No, he cooked it. I went back to my office. And I said, "Give me my fucking car back." I went to the
really?
Yeah. He got fired.
He did?
Yeah. He
got... Oh my god.
He probably hearing this night. I'm gonna get that bastard type.
No. So you gave it to him.
I wanted my Indian gift. I wanted my car back.
Oh no! You imagine man. Mike Tyson calls you up and says, "Give me my fucking car back." Man. Yeah. Like shit.
Yeah, it's outside, man. I got it for
God
you.
God damn it!
Listen, what was I thinking? I gotta tell you something. You guys know I embarked on the marijuana business.
Yes, yes.
Cannabis business, right?
This beautiful box that you
get. That is a beautiful box, by the way.
Tyson man, Ranch. So awesome. Thank you, man, for accepting it.
My pleasure. I'm honored.
That's a cool ass box, man.
Yeah, Tyson Ranch is going to be opening up pretty shortly.
Yeah, you guys have. I saw the plans.
2022.
This is a big deal. I mean, really? this place is gigantic.
Which state?
It's in California.
It is here.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
Yeah, they're setting up like a resort.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be the best facility in the world, man. It's gonna be it's gonna have an acre long lake.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you could go like
it's gonna
stay.
Be camping, you know, it's going to be camping, glamping like.
Glamping. Yeah. Glamorous camping.
Glamorous camping.
Very glamorous, yeah.
How about some tigers and shit? Put some wild
it's
animals.
It's a possibility. My, where my are partner, those tigers? Rob Hickman, was discussing that too.
Where are those tigers?
Well, I had them for like 14 years, so I had to get rid of them. You know what I mean?
What do you do when you want to get rid of a tiger?
A sanctuary. Something.
Oh. All
right, fuck. I got to run. I love you.
Oh,
I love
man,
you.
Tom.
I love you
too, buddy.
I love you.
Look, better cannabis, dude.
There it is.
Yeah, congrats on that, man. That looks dope.
Awesome, man. I'm so excited about this stuff. This is, I love embarking on
later,
this
brother.
Cannabis stuff.
Say
this
how to mess
is so awesome.
Yeah, you seem to be really enjoying this. Like when you're talking to your partners out there, you're having a good time with this.
Oh, man. I never thought that in a million years I'd be able to do this and legalize.
Yeah. When did you start like regularly smoking weed?
Since I was like 10 years old.
The whole time you were fighting, you were regularly smoking weed?
Well, you know, when you're a kid, your mother gives you liquor and marijuana for you, make you think that you're going to go to sleep or something, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That never happened in my house.
Never, no, my mother was alcoholic and stuff.
Damn, that's harsh. Liquor and marijuana, see if you go to sleep.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
I don't think so.
No. Do you what benefits do you get out of marijuana? Like, what does it do for you?
Hey, man, if I didn't, I'd have a bad day. Yeah, I'm a really moody guy without it, and it just it smooths me out. As soon as I take it, I'm a whole different person. I'm really on top of my game. I'm balling.
Yeah, I feel the same way sometimes. It makes me nicer.
Yeah,
yeah, calms me down. Do you do you smoke?
And I like who I am when I smoke. You know what I mean? When I weed, I don't sometimes like who I am sometimes. That's just the real sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like that guy. I want to get away from that guy.
Well, you know, I was talking to Michael Irvin once. He was explaining to me that when children grow up in high-stress environments, that their genes are wired to have a propensity towards violence. That if it's around them all the time, when they're growing up and when they're in the womb.
Yeah, I agree.
When their mother's under extreme stress, if they live in a bad neighborhood. And it's hard for some people like yourself that did grow up in an environment like that to ever reach where you're at right now, just a place of peace. And if you can do that through marijuana or whatever it is, yoga, meditation, whatever you do to get there, like we should be happy that you can get there. That's what we want.
Listen, I am so grateful that I embarked on this. You know, I've never been a person to this at this magnitude, at this kind of relaxation. I just enjoying my time with you. I was very uptight. I was very uncomfortable with myself.
Did you feel any better after you worked out when you were young like that?
Absolutely. But my works out, you know what? The best thing that ever happened to me that I retired from boxing, because me working out and me getting out, I was so intense with this. My whole objective was hurting people and wanting to be the best, and my ego took over, and I'm like Tyson, I'm the best to ever live, and all this bullshit. And dealing with my partner, Rob Hickman, I happened to embark on this, come across this thing called the toad. Are you familiar with the toad?
Yeah, what you're talking about is 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine.
Oh, that's it right there, yeah.
Yeah.
And I came across that, and I smoked this, this medicine, drug, whatever you want to call it and stuff. And I've never been the same. I look at life different. I look at people differently. And the experience I can't even express, really. It's almost like dying and being reborn.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience. That's what it felt like to me, too. Like, you stop existing. The 5-methoxies, there's two...
Tell me, what's the deal with that? What the hell's going on here?
5-methoxies produced by your brain, but it, what it is it's DMT with an oxygen molecule attached to it. So regular DMT is N,N-dimethyltryptamine. And then 5-methoxy-dimethyltryptamine is DMT with like a very, there's a very subtle change to the molecule, and that subtle change for some reason takes away the visuals. You've done regular DMT too, right?
Yes.
Regular DMT is rich with visuals, very strange, bright, colorful, impossible to describe visuals.
Yes, it's inconceivable.
Inconceivable is the best way to put it.
Yeah, inconceivable. Yeah. But I try to explain it to some people, my wife, and it's just I don't have the words to explain it.
That's exactly what I always say. I've done a terrible job explaining it to everybody. Every time I've tried, it just doesn't work. But all those things, they give you perspective.
It's almost like you're dying. You're submissive. You're humble. You know what I mean? You're vulnerable, but you're invincible still in all. You know, it's just that weird feeling.
Well, you feel like you're part of the universe. When you're separate from your ego, you realize this whole thing, you're a part of this whole thing, and this whole thing is unstoppable. It's just, it's a gigantic, huge, all-encompassing, almost like a living thing, life.
You know, Joan, this is what I also realized, too, after going through that experience. You realize how insignificant you are sometimes without your ego.
Yes.
You know, you realize, wow, you're not really much that you really thought you were.
Yeah, you are and you aren't. Obviously, you are in everyday life. I mean, you go places, you have a dramatic effect on people. You mean a lot. You mean a lot to those people that you run into. You mean a lot to the people that you love and that love you. But we all do. And when no one stands, no, it's all relative. No one is irreplaceable, but everyone is special to someone or something, and at least to themselves. Mm-hmm. But we're all the same. We're all a part of this weird, crazy, gigantic organism that's the human race.
You know, so odd that you said it. My mentor, Customato, his objective was to think of nothing. You're nothing. Nothing's nothing but the objective, the job. Mm-hmm. And that was his psychological warfare. You know, nothing matters. You're nothing. Nothing. The only thing that matters is the objective and getting through, accomplishing that objective by going through these methods of boxing.
Do you ever stop and think about how fortunate it was you ran into that guy?
Listen, to this day, I really don't understand that. So how did this happen?
Because so many people.
Listen, by the time I was born, he was 66 years old by the time I was born.
Yeah, crazy. So many people could, you know.
Can't even explain it. It's a magnificent individual.
He was an amazing guy. An amazing part of boxing and with a unprecedented grasp of the mindset required for combat sports. That was the thing that always really stood out about him. Like, he was a guy that was so well-versed in the mindset. I would listen to his speeches that he would talk, when he would talk about you, when he would talk about boxing, he would talk about fear, and about fear can be like a fire, can cook your food, or it can burn your house down, and you have to control it. And when he would describe it, like, it would be so enlightening. He was such a man of wisdom that when he would describe things, they would sink in. They would. Somebody could say the same thing, but with him, he had so much life experience.
He wore so many hats. He was a psychiatrist. Yeah. He was a doctor. He was a father. He was a mother. You know, he was just all around that individual.
Yeah, and with an amazing knowledge of boxing. And for a guy like you, it was almost like it was ordained.
And that's what I always said. It was meant for me to meet this guy. Because I had no way in a million years. Everybody would say, no way you're going to be champ. You're too small.
Yeah.
So you're too short. No way. These guys are too big for you. He's always saying, this is the greatest fight I ever lived. This and this. Always saying this about me. I'm like, oh, God, this guy's just souping me up. I never thought I could, you know, achieve what he was saying. The things he was saying was just so gigantic in my eyes at the time.
Yeah, I mean, when it all happened and it turned out that he was true, and you have to absorb all this when you're 20 years old. You know, I always say this about Justin Bieber, and I don't think Justin Bieber nearly had to deal with what you had to deal with. Your experience was so much crazier because you were not just an incredibly famous guy. You were the baddest man on the planet. So there was like an aura to you everywhere you went. People wanted to see you. You know, 50-year-old men don't give a fuck about Justin Bieber. You know, no disrespect. He's a great guy, a great singer, but it's not – he's like young girls. For young girls, that guy's unbelievably famous, but – he's been famous since he was a little kid. I'm like, who when people hear about him going crazy,
right?
Amazing. When people hear about him going insane, I'm like, of course he's going insane. You have no idea what it would be like to be him and to be 17 years old and girls literally trying to break into his house to throw pussy at him. They're coming down chimneys. They're flying in on parachutes. They're doing anything they can. They just want to be around him. And you want him to be Justin. Normal?
Oh, man, poor guy.
No one can handle that.
What kind of music you listening to?
I listen to everything, man. Yeah. I do. I listen to a lot of classic rock for whatever reason. But I've been listening to a lot of Kanye West over the last few weeks.
Tell me, what's he talking about?
Kanye?
Yeah.
Well, he's talking about a lot of crazy shit. He actually talked about DMT in one of his recent songs.
Really? You think he did that before?
I think he did.
Oh, man.
Well, I know he's friends with Kid Cudi. Mm-hmm. Kid Cudi's been in here, and Kid Cudi's had some psychedelic experiences.
Yeah. Once you go there, it's just... you don't want to do nothing else again.
Well, it puts it all in the perspective. It lets you see that as much as this thing seems to be important, this is all temporary, and you're a part of forever.
And it also allows you to become comfortable with death.
Yeah. Yeah, you know who said that? Larry Hagman. Remember that guy, Dallas?
Yeah.
From JR
from Dallas.
He did an interview with CNN once.
And I Dream a Genie as well.
Yeah, that's right. He sprung it on him on CNN once. He was talking about how he did acid. He took a big dose of acid, and he's never worried about death ever again. That it just alleviated his worry about passing on.
That's wild. It's just that, 'cause I felt the same way. I said, wow, it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I think DMT even more specifically, because they think
What causes it to affect the mind that way?
They don't totally know.
That it make a vision. Visualize everything.
They don't totally know. They know that your brain makes it. They know that your body makes it, they should say. They know that it's produced in your liver and their lungs, and there's some evidence now because they found it in rats that the pineal gland produces it, which is like, that's the third eye of Eastern mysticism. That gland actually, in rats, they've proven, produces DMT, and they think it does so in people, too.
You know, once I did, I wanted to do it again and again and again. And they said, you shouldn't do it too much, Mike. But I was like, man, I got to grasp what's going on here. Why am I feeling this? Why did this, in a weird way, like, humbled you?
I don't think you should listen to the people who say you shouldn't do it too much. I think you should do it as much as you want.
That's what I agree with, too.
Yeah.
I agree.
You could handle it. If you could handle being Mike Tyson, you can handle doing DMT.
DMT, yeah, that's where I think I'm going. I think I'm going in that direction.
Well, I mean, it's not something you should do all day, every day, but you can learn a lot from it. It's very beneficial and very strange that it's illegal. You know, it's illegal.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Even though, like, Terrence McKenna had a joke about it, because your body's making it, so everybody's holding. We all have it. You know, it's illegal, but it's like making blood illegal. Everybody has it.
Isn't it wild when they go to Sonora Desert when they find these toads?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never experienced it from the toad.
I watched it on television.
With the way they extract
it. Yeah, they grab them and they squeeze it. Yeah. It busts his pimples and they bust it on a glass of mirror and then they take it off and they let it harden.
Yeah, they let it dry in the sun. Yeah. They scrape it off with a razor blade.
Yes.
I've only had it synthetically made in a laboratory. You used to be able to buy it online. You used to be able to buy like a fucking can of it, like this big, enough to get like a whole state high. You just buy it online. It was totally legal.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's bizarre that it's illegal.
Well, they would say not for human consumption. Well, I don't know what the fuck you're doing with it if you're not using it for human consumption. But you used to be able to buy it.
I've never felt anything like that before.
No, nothing like that.
Makes me not want to do anything. Nothing else can supersede that.
How long ago did it happen?
I don't know, around 2 months ago.
Yeah. Did you write down what happened after it happened, or did you record it?
No, I wish I did.
Yeah.
I wish I did.
Yeah, me too. It goes away like a dream, right?
It comes off, you know, you're so scared. It starts off like this to me, like, no, 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 yeah! That's how I start. No, I don't want to be this. I said, hey, I want this to stop now. And the guy was like, hey, you're on the ride. And I'm like, no, 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 yeah!
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Yeah, you love everybody.
Yeah, so spazzed out.
Yeah. Did you have a hard time letting go?
At the beginning, I was fighting it. I was thinking, stop. I wanted to stop now. I just jumped. Stop this shit now. Stop. And the guy was like, hey, the show. I'm like, I can't do it. Gotta go for the ride, dude. And it was like, oh, man. It's like I'm dying. Things are going in my face. I'm seeing the Aztec things. I'm seeing toad. I'm just seeing weird animals. The things are just flying. It's like another chamber. It's boom, flashing. You're like, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And you're gone. It's like a rocker. You're taking off. Boom.
Yeah, it's beyond your imagination.
Yeah, it's inconceivable. Can't even explain it to no one.
Well, I'm hoping that they start with psilocybin because I know MAPS, they're doing some great work with that, trying to get these things legalized. Especially they're doing MDMA studies with veterans and people with PTSD, and they're having great results. They're moving into psilocybin. They would love to get psilocybin legal, and it's up for ballot. I think it was in Oregon. Is that where it is? It's up for – I think Oregon is up for legalization this year, and it may be eventually in California as well. They may
put it up for legalization. How are you going to do with
that? It should be legal. It doesn't kill anybody. It should be – it's not a bad thing if they regulate it, if they make it for therapeutic use and just set up centers where experts can show – but they shouldn't make it prohibitive for people to own it or even grow their own. It's not a bad idea to set up places where people can do it under a professional's care, a shaman's care, a physician's care. That's a good idea. But making it illegal is a bad idea because it helps a lot of people. You know, people think of it as a party drug. They think you're going to do mushrooms and freak out and go fucking run around naked. And, I was on mushrooms.
I used to do mushrooms. I loved mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, psilocybin and DMT are very closely related chemically. All those really potent psychedelic drugs are very closely related. They all break down in some similar path inside your brain and give you that weird ego dissolving experience. You know, that's one thing.
Yeah, most of the drugs you do are most ego enhancing.
Right. Like coke.
Yeah, you're like, the baddest mother. You're just gone, man.
Yeah, you know, you've never had coffee. I've never had coke.
Never?
Never.
Oh, man.
I feel like I missed out.
Bad exchange, huh? No, you didn't miss out on nothing, man.
Yeah, that one I ducked. When I was in high school, my friend's cousin used to sell it. And he wasted away to nothing. Him and his girlfriend would hang out in the attic, never come out. They would just sell coke and watch TV. It was bad. It was like a vampire bit him. He just became a...
Once you get in that kind of vicious cycle, it's a wrap.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ducked it. I ducked it early. Never did coke.
Man.
When was the first time you did coke?
I don't know. I was a kid, 11, 12.
Shit.
I got involved with drugs early in life.
Wow. That's crazy. 11, 12.
Yeah. I was still living in Brownsville, Brooklyn when I first did cocaine.
Wow. That's a crazy
age. Listen, I would never let my children. I have a 10-year-old daughter and 8-year-old. I would never let them live the life that I live. I would hate that. I would always fight so hard. I never want them to be in the environment that I grew up in.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, you have the benefit of having gone through it. You know, no one else could ever understand how difficult any of your life must have been for you. It's got to be one of the harder things. When you did that documentary, it's an amazing documentary. When you're very honest, and you're very open about all your experiences. And the one thing I took away after that, like, no one can understand. You could hear a guy talk like this. I could hear you say these things. I could see the videos of your fights, see the videos of your experience. But to understand the life that you lived, it's impossible. It's just a guess. It's like a guess for someone like me from the outside.
It's just really interesting. I used to look at it, think about this young kid from Brooklyn, New York, comes to Custom Auto at 13, 12, you know, and all of a sudden, I have a low self-esteem. This guy gives me this big fucking ego. You know what I mean? I live by the rules of that ego, and I've accomplished so much.
And a dominator ego,
yeah.
Right? You're set.
Oh, all about
confidence.
Destroying people. Yeah. Yeah. Just anybody. You could be a lawyer. You're 200 pounds. I'm staring you down. It was a weird environment growing up that way. You know, because we as people, we try to avoid fights. You know what I mean?
Right.
For my instincts, we avoid fights for all our lives, and just to be able, this is what you do. Like you're a UFC guy, you're a fighter. This is what you do for a job, a lifestyle. That's pretty bizarre.
But you were getting positive reinforcement from thinking like that for the first time in your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Never felt like that before. But like taking a big drug, like a Lucy, just boom, it felt like you're the man. Then everybody's telling you you're great.
Yeah.
You know.
For the first time in your life.
Never understood that. And you know what else Custom Auto used to do with me? He used to take me to a hypnotist. He was a hypnotist as well. Yeah, and I used to go into the hypnotist motions.
What kind of shit did they make you do?
you know,
and how they do it.
You relax, you go under, you totally focus on blackness, nothingness.
Right.
You go under and you're just being the savage, intelligent animal. You're just working. You're going to do this. You're going to be a ferocious animal. You're going to fight, punch both hands to the body. You'll use your jab. You're going to do this in ferocious fashion. And they seeked all that in me as I was younger.
And you were like 12, 13 years
yeah.
old? Wow. So they're putting you under and just teaching you that mindset.
Yeah.
Whoa. Did he give you any advice on how to shut it off?
No.
No. He was probably like, I don't have any time. He was probably no. like, I don't have any time. The kid's 13. How old was Cuss at the time?
He was like 70, 71.
Like, shit, there's no time. Yeah. There's no time. I'm not going to teach him the off switch. Just hit the gas.
That's what it was, the gas. We're going to destroy these guys. These guys are in our way of, you know what I mean, greatness, glory.
It's one of the hardest things that many fighters I've watched over the years have the problem of shutting it off. Like turning it on and living like that and just wanting to be a dominator, but then learning how to be a father, learning how to be
My first lifetime with children and stuff, trying to do this stuff, man, I failed so disastrously. You know, it was just, I had no idea what I was doing to it. I had no idea what arena I was stepping into. It was just disastrous. I find out I spend most of my adult life now apologizing to my kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Being such a horrible father.
Do you think they understand like, the shit that you were going through? They understand like
I have no idea what they understand. No, I don't understand. I just try to basically make sure that part of my life is empty now. I live a different life for my kids,
right?
My family now.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. It's beautiful that you like Tom was saying earlier, you have a lot of self-reflection. You've managed to look at your life and find out what has value to you, what helps you.
You always have to do self-evaluation. I'm just a strong believer in that.
Yeah.
You know, somebody has to check you. You have to check yourself.
I agree. Yeah. Well, especially a guy like you who's, you know, you've been checked. Your ego's been mm-hmm. checked. Your life has been checked. You've had so many down moments as well as up moments. You've had the full ride of experiences.
Never thought I'd survive with my ego being checked. I had no idea that that wasn't what it was about.
So you thought if your ego checked, you would go away?
I'd be nothing without my ego.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense when you're going through all that hypnosis when you're 12 and 13 years old. That's a crazy thing to do to a kid because it was super effective.
I had no
idea,
but I wanted to do it so bad. I wanted to succeed so bad.
You could tell. You know, I watched a video of you real recently. You were about 16, 17 years old, and you were sparring with some big guy who was a professional heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
And you were what was fascinating to me about it wasn't just watching you move around when you were young and still learning, but it was also you were upset at yourself after it was over. You didn't think it went well. And I was like,
I don't remember that.
You don't remember? Yeah. It was an interesting video, man. You were like, yeah, it didn't go well. I could tell it didn't go well.
I was a thick perfectionist as a kid.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It seemed like it. Like you were obsessed.
That's my whole life. That's all I did was look at boxing, watch boxing, read about fighters. It was all about fighters. Fighters were my God. Fighter? Yeah. Oh, you know that guy? That's a fighter. I want to be around them, be their groupie.
That's another amazing occurrence. Imagine that you also knew Jim Jacobs and that fucking fight library that
That's all I did was watch films on there.
Amazing. This is pre-VHS, right? People had VHS, but not many. And those fights weren't on VHS.
No way. Remember before, like, if you missed the fight, you weren't going to see it again.
Right.
Then you had to tape them.
Yeah. And Jim Jacobs, he kept those things on, like, a regular old projector type thing. If you listen to the voiceover on some of those old fights, it's Jim Jacobs. Yeah. It's him doing commentary on some of the old fights that didn't have any volume.
Now you study all these guys all day and all night. You study them.
Yeah. It was through you that I learned about a lot of fighters. Yeah. When you would talk about Jack Dempsey, talk about different fighters from the old days, I learned about a lot of those guys from you. I went back and watched some of those tapes, and now it's beautiful. Now you can just get on YouTube and you
see whatever you want.
See everything. See all of it. But to go back and
watch some of those tapes. To my office and present this, we're going to see this show.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to see this show.
Exactly.
I mean, I can't wait. I want you to come by to the ranch when the ranch
I would love to. I'm in.
Productive. It's going to be awesome.
So you said 2022?
Yeah.
So 4 years, what is it? Yeah, 4 years from now? Three years from now?
It's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, the plans look amazing, you know? How long have you guys been working towards this?
Hey, listen, we had seen the property and then we purchased it and we were just so overwhelmed with it. This is probably what, I don't know, maybe a year ago, maybe not even that long, maybe a year or so, year and a half or so.
Are you going to have a gym up there?
Hey, I never thought, but we will have, because we'll have the wellness center.
Yeah. Dude, how great would it be if you taught like a boxing class every
day? I don't know about all that stuff, though, but we're going to hang out there and work out.
Just a fun boxing class, like hitting the heavy bag, just something fun. You don't have to get people beating each other up. Do you know how much people would pay to smoke weed and come learn how to box from you?
That's going
to
be awesome. They can smoke weed with me. That'd be cool.
Do you smoke weed with people, just regular folks?
Yeah, I smoke weed, yeah. I was trying to get my wife to smoke with me, though.
She doesn't smoke?
Yeah, she smokes. Only at nighttime. She can't function during the daytime.
Oh, right,
she
right.
She do things
right.
during the day.
Well, if you, I would imagine if I was a mother, it would be very hard to get high because I'd get paranoid, you know? I'd be a lot.
Yeah, plus she doesn't do it during the day.
At nighttime, it's different. Smoke a little weed, relax.
Hey, did you ever do any fighting?
I did kickboxing and taekwondo tournaments. I was pretty good at taekwondo. I won a bunch of state championships and won a few national tournaments.
When did you know you wanted to get physical with another human being and do this stuff? Because, you know, you can't be in right frame of mind to want to do this stuff.
No.
You got to realize that.
I was
very
scared.
People that do this stuff are not in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
And that's dealing with fear drives you insane.
Yeah.
To deal with that drives people insane. I was insane during my career. Yes, madly insane from fear.
Yeah. Obviously, I never went through anything like the level that you went through. But for these full contact taekwondo fights, I was always scared. And but I was scared before that. I was bullied. I moved around a lot. I was a little kid. I was never very big. And we moved from New Jersey to San Francisco when I was 7, from San Francisco to Florida when I was 11, Florida to Boston when I was 14 or 13. So it's just always moving to new schools, always dealing with new kids, and I wasn't big, and I didn't know how to fight, and I got picked on, and I didn't like it. So I said, I want to figure out how to fight. And so I started getting into martial arts, and I just became obsessed with it. I did it every day. I started teaching. I was teaching at Boston University. I was teaching a taekwondo course when I was 19. I was competing from the time I was 15. I just threw myself into it. It's all I did every day. I worked at the school. I was there every day. I had the keys. I closed up. I opened up. And because of you, because of hearing about you, when you were running in the morning, when you knew that everybody else was asleep, that gave you an edge, I'd go there in the middle of the night and open up and work out. I just wanted to just have an edge, you know, and I listened to what you said, and I said, that's a great way to have an edge. I became obsessed with it. But there was no future in it. And then what happened was I went from taekwondo to kickboxing. And when I started kickboxing, I started getting fucked up. Dudes were beating the shit out of me because I was realizing, like, I can't keep people at the same distance anymore because I didn't know how to use my hands properly. Like, I knew how to throw some punches a little bit from taekwondo, but it's not nearly as sophisticated as boxing or kickboxing. And so then I started kickboxing training, and then I started realizing, like, there's no future in this. Like, what am I doing? I'm just getting my brains beat in, you know, and I'm hard sparring, too. The sparring was rough. It was Boston style, put the gloves on, beat the shit out of each other, figure it out as you go along.
Yeah, you ain't going shit. You figure it out as you go along.
Figure it out as you go along. So a lot of headaches and, you know, but it was hard for me to shut that part of me off, the part of me that just wanted to conquer, the part of me just wanted to win all the time, to figure out a way to be more intense, more driven, more focused. But when I did stop fighting, it was a huge relief. Like, the relief part was worth the extra anxiety that I got. It was worth it just for the relief of not thinking about fighting all the time, not thinking about when's the next tournament, when's the next event, when's the next thing I'm doing. It was just
that weight.
Yeah. Well, for you, it had to be way crazier because not only is it the weight, it's the heavyweight championship of the world.
I always wanted to make my mentor happy.
Yeah.
That's my goal, to make him happy all the time.
When he died, was it weird not having a person like that in your
life? It was it was emptiness. It was just, and then people who we thought was our friends and that we say we're going to be good to, they just started, when he died, they just started going in for the kill. He just wanted to grasp me for means.
It seemed like you and Kevin Rooney had a good combination at the beginning.
Yeah.
When he died, when Cuss died.
Well, listen, we didn't know what we were going to do. They were thinking about getting rid of Kevin or something. I was saying, I didn't want to be with nobody else.
Right.
And I was comfortable with Kevin and the style and the way we were working. I didn't want to be with nobody else. I said, no, let's just keep Kevin.
Yeah, and Kevin was a great trainer, too.
Yeah, for me, he was.
Very well-respected trainer. Yeah. It was a good relationship, like the way it worked in the beginning, it looked like. But then, like all things, you know.
Kevin used to train me and then fighting on his undercard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And this was all, like, was he training you before before Cuss died as well?
Well, yeah.
How many years before Cuss died was he like holding mitts for you and?
Just a couple.
But he knew you well.
Yes. Did he knew watch the style well?
Did he watch fights with you as well? Did you, or were you watching those fights? Every now and then
we watch a fight. Like once we started training with each other, we started watching fights together.
Because your that was the other thing too. Your style, the way you would come out, was so reminiscent of old fighters. When you come out with no socks on, black shoes.
That was wild. That I was thinking my mind of thinking was all about Gladiator and being tough. And I would never think. I look at it now. So look at that silly little kid. What does that silly kid think he's tough? I would think this guy thinks he's tough.
Well, you were tough, man. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but you were. When you fought Marvis Frazier on, what is that, ABC Wire World Sports?
Yeah, remember those days, ABC had fights?
I remember watching that fight going, holy shit. Holy shit, that was like being locked into a ring with a tornado.
That was wild days. I was a tough kid.
That was your peak. That was when it was peak scary. You know, you were coming up and everybody was just terrified. It was just a wild thing to watch, man. To be a part of it, to be you.
Yeah, I wanted to make my mentor real happy, though. That's my main goal in fighting.
It's a powerful goal.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to go back and get hypnotized after all that's over to try to maybe calm down that part of your mind that they turned on?
No, I never did. I had the toad, I think, helped me out.
The toad?
The other stuff, none of that stuff would help me out.
Yeah. Did weed help you out at all?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I had to do it every day. I had to do it all the time.
Right.
I had to do it all the time then.
Yeah.
If I went to another country and I didn't have my weed, I'd be insane. I'd say, what? Yeah. No weed? I got to be here a couple of days, a week, a month? Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of the world will catch up eventually. They'll catch up eventually. It's slowly happening. We were talking about it before the show started, that just a few years ago, if you smoked weed, you felt like you were a criminal. Like,
yeah, you had to hide it all the time, look around. Man, you're looking around, is that a cop?
It's still like that in New York. I was in New York recently. And we had to hide weed.
That's crazy.
Still illegal there. I'm like, how is this New York City in 2019?
So antiquated, right?
It's so stupid. It just doesn't make any sense. Especially when, like, we're both high right now.
Man, the kite.
It's fine. Everything's good. Having a nice conversation.
Beautiful, I agree. I totally agree.
How many fights did Jim Jacobs have in that library?
I don't know. Thousands of them, man. I watched thousands. Guys fighting in 1898, watched them all.
Wow. Who were standouts for you outside of the stand? Like, obviously, Jack Johnson.
Yeah, he was awesome, too. He was just amazing. He was ahead of his time fighting. There's also little guys like Tony Cannonieri, Harry D. Armstrong, Barney Ross, guys like that, Benny Leonard. These guys are just, they evolved boxing to the level where it can evolve to now. They were superstars in their time.
Who was that crazy middleweight who went up to fight Jack Johnson and dropped
Stanley Ketchum.
That's right.
He's a badass.
Could punch.
Yeah, he's a badass. Stanley. He got killed.
Yeah.
By a guy's crime. Yeah, because he stole this guy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he was a tough guy. Like, what are you going to do about it? Beat the guy up. He disrespected the guy. And the guy came back and shot him.
Yeah.
Stanley Ketchum was a real wild and crazy guy.
Well, most of the greats were.
Yeah, he was wild.
That's
Didn't feel anyone.
Well, when you talk about like your life and like the way you were living, if you go back to most of the greats, like Roberto Duran, he was a wild motherfucker.
Out of his mind, man. He's beautiful though. It was beautiful. Yeah. He just had rhythm with it.
Yeah. There's so many of the greats were just wild, wild people. You know?
I think it's that fear that just brings that out of you.
Yeah. But then there was some greats that were just real disciplined. Like strong, like Marvin Hagler's my best example for that. When I was a kid growing up in Boston, Hagler was the middleweight champion of the world. And I used to see, they used to have video of him running. They played it on the news. He was running on there was the dunes, sand dunes in Cape Cod in the winter, freezing cold, with a hoodie on, running, screaming, war, war!
Crazy, right?
Oh, it was amazing. Marvin Hagler made you want to just get out of your house and go running in the snow. You know, he was so disciplined. That was the thing that I always got out of watching him. Wasn't that he was so wild. He was so mentally strong. He had an iron chin, and his discipline was impeccable. He was just constantly training, never out of shape, never got fat, always doing sit-ups and push-ups.
He was a ferocious animal, right? So his body?
Yeah. Oh, he was chiseled. He was a machine. That fight with Tommy Hearns,
that was one of
the greatest middleweight encounters of all time. Chaos. I mean, it's
skillful. We didn't know what was going to happen. We thought they were going to stop the fight. They were going to stop the fight. And Tommy Hearns was going to be the winner.
As skillful as they were, they decided to just smash, just get into the center and fucking fling. There was no, like, Tommy Hearns should have tried to use his jab, box in the outside.
How are you gonna keep, you're not going to keep Marvin Hagler off you.
You Marvin can't keep him off you. A dog
if you don't try to take him out, it's almost crazy. You can't box him like that. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard did that, but they weren't at their prime then.
Yeah.
I wanted to see those two guys in their prime just go at it.
Yeah, Sugar Ray Leonard, especially when he fought Hagler, fought Hagler smart. Just stay the fuck away. Yeah,
exactly.
I heard the craziest rumor. Tell me if this is the craziest rumor. That Marvin Hagler, like, decided to bet on himself for that fight, knew that he was going to lose, like they had it set up, and then retired and went to Italy. That's a ridiculous rumor, right?
Hey, I don't know what anybody did, but I never heard anything like that.
You never heard that one?
No.
But he's one of the most interesting end of careers ever.
I heard rumors that he didn't fight the fight that he should have fought, that he knew he should have fought.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The rumor was he went to Italy because the mob set everything up.
Something to that effect.
He went to Italy and became a giant movie star. But he's the only guy that I can think of in recent memory that literally went out on top. Had this unbelievably close fight with Sugar Ray Leonard, who a lot of people think he could have won that fight. Very close decision. And then says, that's it. See ya. I'm done. Everybody comes back.
It's hard not to come back, you know?
Yeah.
I guess at one time, that's your whole life. I was thinking, I'm surprised I never came back. That was just my whole life. That was my whole identity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And,
but when you did retire, and when you retired in the ring, that was the most honest retirement speech I've ever heard a boxer give ever. He's just like, I don't have this in me anymore.
No, I just wasn't there anymore. Just that was pretty bizarre for myself, even, you know, because this is what I based my life on doing. When I first started doing it, I said, I'm going to dedicate my life to this stuff. And just to see that it's not even, it's no longer going to happen, was pretty weird.
When did you know that you didn't want to do it anymore?
I've known years before that, but I was still being very successful.
Yeah. Like when? You know, like what year? Like, do you remember around when you started thinking it?
I remember. Probably around, the 2000 area?
So by the time that's post Holyfield,
yeah, after Holyfield, yeah.
And you'd done too much.
I was just winning them, winning, beating guys. You know, guys get hit or something, and some guys be so scared.
Yeah. What did you have in mind? Like, that's the hardest thing, right? To swing from that to the next thing. Like, how do you take this crazy exciting life?
I don't know. I just decided. Listen, let me just get high for a while. And figure this out.
That was the plan?
Yeah. Let me party for a while and figure this stuff out.
What did you figure out?
That I wanted to do other things. So I started, my wife arranged for me to be this thespian on stage.
That she created the live show?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant idea. Because you're also the first fighter that ever did that. Because many fighters have great stories, but very few of them have ever, I don't think anybody besides you has ever put it into a theatrical thing.
We went
all overseas.
We did it, man, it's just amazing. We did it in Monaco. We did it in Rome. We did it amount of various places. And I just can't believe that people want to see that stuff.
Well, like I said, the documentary was amazing. So people wanted to hear the live version of you talking about it and to see you live in person.
Because the first time we did it, on Broadway, that is, right? We were really not sure about how it was going to turn out. So we invited all of our friends. We had tickets and gave all to our friends and people we love, like names, and we brought them to the show. And so when we started, they started laughing. Everybody started laughing. So I ran to my wife. I ran upstairs. I said, baby, what's going on? Is everything okay? You know, I didn't want the show to be a comedy. It turned out to be a comedy. It was supposed to be a hard, gritty show about a tough guy that made it through his toughness. And it just came up about me just talking about myself, how much a smuck I am. You know what I mean? And they loved it.
Well, I think that was part of it. It's because, like, everybody knew you were this tough guy, but they didn't know that you could be so self-deprecating and have so much fun with it all. You know, that's why people loved it. Cause
they're doing the writing for my movie and stuff. I haven't seen anything, but it's going to be pretty wild.
Who's playing you in a movie?
I don't know. There's been various people, but, you know, most likely when
Jamie Foxx.
Fox to do it.
He could do it. He could do anything.
He could do anything.
Anything.
Right?
That guy could be the fucking president of the United States. He could be a pilot that goes to the moon. He could do whatever he wants.
I want him to do it, yeah.
He could do whatever he wants. He'll probably bulk up like crazy, too, to do it.
It's going to be really wild.
Yeah. Jamie could pull it off. Michael Jai White pulled it off.
Huh?
Michael Jai White.
He can't do it like Jamie, I don't think.
I don't know.
I thought he didn't do a bad guy. A lot of people didn't like what he did, but I thought he did a good job.
I think he did a good job. I loved him in Spawn. He's a great guy. Do you know him well?
No.
He's a great guy. Great guy. Very smart guy. Very humble guy. Really, really intelligent. And a great martial artist, too. Michael Jai White. He was a Kyokushin karate black belt. He's a bad motherfucker.
Did he fight in the UFC?
No. When he was fighting, there was no UFC around, but he did a lot of karate tournaments and stuff. He's very good. I've watched him train before. He's legit. Very legit. But like I said, real, real good guy. But yeah, I agree. Jamie Foxx, man. Jamie Foxx is on another planet. He's just got this level of competence and skill and artistry in his singing, in his comedy, in his acting. He could do anything. He could play you. Is he going to hang out with you for a while?
I don't know what he's going to do.
He's got to hang out with you.
So he's pretty awesome.
He's got to hang out with you. Got to absorb it, right?
Yeah, let's see how that works out.
Are you going to be like his consultant? Are you going to be like, bitch, I would have never said that.
I would like to say that, yeah. I'd like to be a consultant. But for some reason, they just, they have their Hollywood ways of doing things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They make it come out Hollywoodish, I guess.
Yeah.
Because some things that, it's just really wild how they try to switch it to appear presentable.
Right. Yeah, they try to change the story.
And know what else I realized too? When Hollywood perspective, some things are real. It's just still unbelievable.
Yeah, itself.
Yeah, things are really just unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, do you know that movie Foxcatcher? Did you know that movie?
Yeah, the wrestling movie. Mm-hmm. I remember that story. I was a young guy. I remember that.
Yeah, the guy,
right?
Mark Schultz. It was Dave Schultz and Mark Schultz. Wrestlers. Dave Schultz is the one who got murdered. Mark Schultz is the guy who fought in the UFC. Mm-hmm. Here's what's crazy about that movie. I don't know how much of that movie is accurate. I don't know. I wasn't there. But what I do know is the one thing that I for sure know happened, they changed. When he fought in the UFC, Mark only fought in the UFC once. He fought a guy named Big Daddy Goodrich. Gary Big Daddy
black
Goodrich.
Guy, right?
Yeah.
I know who that is.
Big black guy wore a karate gi mm-hmm. and then eventually got rid of the gi later in his career. But he's a legend. Big Daddy's a legend. In the movie, it's not Big Daddy. In the movie, he's fighting some white guy. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I could see
they just they changed who he's fighting for no reason. It's a historical event. It's like if for whatever reason they decided to not have you fight Trevor Burbick, you fought someone else. Like you fought Jerry Cooney for the title or something.
That would
it'd
be crazy.
They'd be like, why would you change history?
Like I hope they don't do nothing. I can't want to do if they do something like that. It has to be.
They did it with the UFC and they did it with Foxcatcher.
Most accurate as can be.
Right, but it doesn't make it any better. That's what's crazy. It doesn't make the movie any better to have him fight a Russian guy. It doesn't make any sense.
It
made
it better fighting Daddy because he's known in the UFC.
Especially for people like me that are in the audience that go, oh, look who's playing Big Daddy.
How did he do it, Big Daddy? Big Daddy's tough.
He took Big Daddy down at will.
Yeah,
he did whatever he wanted to him. He's Mark Schultz.
Yeah.
He was a motherfucker of a wrestler. I mean, him and his brother were savages. They were savages. They were just made out of steel
rope.
But
what was the deal with that guy? How did they hook up with that guy? What did
the
guy
was really, really
do?
Rich, and there's no money in amateur wrestling. And these guys, a lot of them are really struggling. When they're trying to make the Olympics team, I mean, they're getting by, barely. They barely have enough money for healthy food. And they need sponsors. And sometimes they get sponsors like a rich guy who owns a business. You know, he loves the Olympics. He loves wrestling. Maybe he wrestled in college, and he'll take care of them, get them some vitamins, maybe sponsor him with the – and then, you know, they have various people that help them with their training and their food. But this guy came along and said, look, I'm going to build a gigantic facility to create the best wrestling program and pay you guys all money to come and train here. And they couldn't help it. It's like they were poor. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, and he was a guy who was like a trust fund guy. He got all his money from his family. And he was just some crazy rich asshole. And he wound up shooting one of them. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, like you said, the story itself is fucking crazy enough. The actual story, they didn't have to change anything of it. So I know they changed that part of it. So who knows what else in the movie they added or changed or fucked with. They fucked with something they didn't have to fuck with. They went Hollywood with it in a way that they didn't have to do. So it makes you question all the other things that happened in the movie.
That's pretty bizarre.
So for you, they can't do that. Your life is crazy.
Insane. You know what? I was saying to myself, okay, do I really want to do this stuff, man? Do I really want to go on the screen with my life and be sincere with these people?
Yeah.
I said, do I really need that? I've been thinking about that recently. Do I really need this stuff? And I'm in this cannabis business getting ready to pop off and do really well. I'm saying, I don't really Do I really need this money that
It's
bad?
Not going to hurt you. Yeah. It's not going to hurt you. It's going to help you. Anything helps you at this point. You're so honest that anything that you've done in the past that you're embarrassed about or you're shameful of, it just makes, it's just better. It's just better for you. It's like you made mistakes. People can learn from them. These are beneficial. So watching someone like you talk about your life is beneficial for people because you learn how you can overcome these experiences, how bad things can be for you. You learn how bad you can fuck up. And people need to see shit like that. It's good for civilization. It's good for our culture. I think so. And plus, a guy like you, who was, like I said, when I was a kid, you were the fucking man. I mean, you were the fucking man. To have a guy like you be self-deprecating, explaining, and laughing about things, it makes it even, it sinks in more. It's like you were saying, what we were saying about Customato, that his wisdom is sunk in. Like he was the gravel in his voice and the intensity in his eyes and the wisdom in his words, it sunk in. I remembered his quotes for years afterwards because he lived so much, because he had so much. And that's the same thing with you, man. When you're talking about your life experiences, like people listen, they take it in because they know you lived an extraordinary life. So they better not fuck this movie up.
Yeah, real extreme.
It's extreme as it gets. What's more extreme other than a soldier? Those are the only people that live a more extreme life. First responders, soldiers, firemen, police officers.
Yes, wow.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they're seeing death and violence every day. Other than them, you probably live the most extreme life ever. Who the fuck could relate to you? Do you ever get together with other, like, world-class pro boxers that have...
No, but the guy that do get into it, the guy you talk about, the veterans and stuff.
Yeah.
They be telling me weird stuff, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, talk to SEALs about their time deployed.
I'm surprised they don't take themselves out. A lot of those guys,
they're
going dark side.
Well, a lot of those guys are finding some relief in the same things that you found relief in. They find relief in DMT and other psychedelics, mushrooms. I think that could be a great benefit to a lot of our veterans.
I believe that 100% too. I don't know why they don't want to dabble in this stuff.
Yeah. What do you think would have happened to you if you got a hold of that stuff while you were in your prime?
I don't know. I don't think maybe I want to be a fighter then.
Yeah.
Maybe I wouldn't want to be a fighter.
Damn, DMT might have derailed it.
Yeah. I might want to love everybody. You know, that's what it makes you feel like. When you come out of it, you say, I love you.
Yeah.
Yes, they love everybody.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that with great organizations like MAPS, that one day people will be able to see things, like everybody will be able to see things the way you do. And then we'll all have this understanding of what these things are. They're tools that can help us. All these things, including marijuana. Mm-hmm. It's a tool to help us. You could abuse any tool. You could abuse any tool there is. You could take a hammer and hit yourself in the head if you're stupid. You could abuse anything. But you could also use it build yourself a beautiful house. And with cannabis, you could use it to it makes you a nicer person. Does makes you more I feel more vulnerable. I have more of a sense of community. I'm always hugging people when I'm high. I want to hug everybody, you know.
I agree. It's a better feeling than you know what I mean.
It makes you feel kind.
I agree. I like feeling kind.
What is it like for you to watch boxing these days?
It's not my life anymore.
You don't watch it at all? Like, did you watch Tyson Fury, no, Deontay Wilder?
No, I didn't watch it.
Oh, it was a great fight.
I was in the air flying when they were fighting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You didn't watch any of the highlights or anything?
I saw some of the highlights, yes.
How crazy is Deontay Wilder's power?
Good stuff.
Crazy, right? Because he's built so strange. It's 209 pounds.
How incredible was Tyson's jaw?
Incredible. Incredible. And gets up and wins the rest of the round. That's what's really incredible. It's amazing, amazing good fight. Stuff. Yeah. So you don't follow any of it today?
No, I always, that's part of my life. I got mixed feelings with that part of my life.
Right, right.
You know
what
I mean? A lot of stuff that I don't like about myself and stuff. I try to forget that stuff because I'm on a whole different pattern. Yeah.
Yeah. So even watching other people box.
I don't even watch nothing. I try to stay away as much as possible.
So watching other people box makes you think about yourself when you were fighting. It reminds you of it.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I always say these guys are so much nicer than I was. You know what I mean? These are cool guys, man.
Yeah, right? Like who out? Yeah, there's no one out there today that's got that mean, vicious persona
anymore.
Yeah,
these are nice guys.
Yeah, you when you were in the ring doing a post-fight interview saying you wanted to eat your children. you want to eat someone's children. I remember saying, this is the craziest fucking post-fight interview. It was about Lennox Lewis, right?
Yeah, it's a madman.
Alexander the Great.
What's wrong with me? I'm just a madman.
It was amazing. It was amazing. For the story, for the time. I mean, look, what it was when we saw Rocky III, right? And Mr. T was challenging, you know, Rocky, and he would say all that crazy shit about what he was going to do. My prediction, pain.
That was beautiful.
It was
right?
beautiful. What you did is you took that and just cranked it up to 11 and threw gasoline on it and lit it on fire. You just took that kind of ferocious shit talking.
Yeah, I look at some of those press conferences a long time ago, what I'm saying to these guys, I would never talk to anybody like that. You know, it's just such a different world now. My world is so different now.
Do you feel when you watch that stuff that you feel almost like trapped by that past, like that you have to acknowledge it, you don't even acknowledge it anymore?
Yeah, so that I'm almost a little bit like, I don't want to be involved. I wish that never happened.
Yeah. But kind of had to happen for you to be who you are now.
Yeah, but no, it's because people, this is the real reason, right, Joe? People love that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people love that. I didn't like that guy that much. So I have my, I'm conflicting with people that like that guy and me living my life that I am living now.
Yeah. Well, people loved that guy because that guy gave them a drug, and that drug was excitement. Like, you'd turn on the TV, like, oh, shit, here we go. Michael Spinks, Mike Tyson, here we go. And boom! Oh! That's what people wanted. They wanted that excitement. They knew some crazy shit was about to go down. Unpredictable. No one knows what's going to happen in a fight. Is it going to be a right or a left? Is he going to move right? Is he going to move left? How's it going to work out? You don't know. How long can Spinks last? You don't know. And everybody was excited. And that's what you brought people. You brought people this chaotic moment. You slapped down the money in the pay-per-view, you got out your popcorn, and you waited for the rush of excitement.
Those were crazy days.
Crazy days.
Crazy.
I mean, I hate to keep bringing your head back to that, but just for me, as a kid growing up during that time, it was a big part of my, you know, my becoming an adult. It was during your era. Your era of dominance.
I always look at my kids and I think, wow, these guys are pretty much middle-class kids. They live their life. They do what they want. They go to college and everything. I would never want to put that pressure on my son that you have to be the total best. You have to dominate everybody. You're going to be the best that ever lived at this. And you put that kind of pressure on them. That's incredible. I would never do that to them.
Yeah, it would never work, probably. I mean, I don't think a kid that grows up in a loving household with supportive parents.
Yeah, you guys, boxing for when you have nothing.
Yeah.
When you do boxing when you had nothing, because that's a lot of dedication, that's a lot of pain, that's a lot of aggravation, it's really discovering who you are.
But you must be able to take pride in the fact that your children don't ever have to do that.
Oh, and that's why I took the punches for they wouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I had I have this son that's 16. He wanted to be a boxer. I said, you silly.
I saw you working with him.
Yeah, the get out of here. You ain't gonna fight. Get out of here. You stupid. You go to private school. You want to be a boxer and stuff. Travel, you go to European trips. You do your trips and all stuff, vacations. You want to be a fighter? Get out of here. You're a joke, man. And he's really serious. Like, he's serious, man. I don't want nobody. You really going to do fight some guy like me?
Yeah.
Some animal? I don't want my kids to go through that crap. Yeah. That's the degrading, some guy like that beating on you.
Yeah. That's the thing, is the fuel that you had, the burning inferno inside you. You can't replicate that.
They don't understand that. I don't know. You know, a lot of stuff shame inspires a lot of success.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't have to deal with that kind of shame.
Right, right. Shame, pain.
Exactly.
Feeling of being left out, feeling of not belonging.
And you got an opportunity. If I do this, everybody's going to love me.
Yeah.
Crazy feeling. It's feeling. Imagine to get people, you want to be accepted so badly.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You want to be accepted. People to look at you in awe. What kind of mindset is that? That's that ego. Want people to just look at you.
Yeah.
You're a sick fuck. sick. Fuck. I want people to look at me. Oh, man.
Yeah, but it's beautiful that you could describe it that way now. Like, you've stepped outside of it long enough. Do you recognize what it was when it was overcoming you?
I was a sick guy. I used to read stories of Alexander the Great, how this guy was a god. I said, wow. I want to be like that. You know, this is crazy. It's just crazy how you get inspired to believe that you're more than what you are.
Well, it was also those feelings of conquering were giving you the first success and good feelings of your life. and the fact that they programmed you. I mean, that's something that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, the hypnotism and the putting those thoughts into your mind, which were hugely beneficial. You could tap into that mind zone right before you competed. I mean, they gave you a clear path. They give you a clear path to use your fury with this like very analytical approach with perfect boxing technique and an amazing mentor with incredible amount of knowledge, and they just let you loose.
You have to be enthusiastic. Yeah. You have to be enthusiastic.
Yeah. Bad intentions.
Yeah, being bad intentions and have enthusiasm when you're fighting. Yeah. Love every minute of it.
Yeah. Look at you. You're getting fired up again.
Yeah, because it's crazy.
Do you work out anymore?
Nah, man, I keep away from that stuff, man.
You don't even like
all that stuff, you know,
spin class or anything?
No, all that stuff reactivates my ego.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
When I get ripped and all that stuff, I reactivate it.
That's the thing about like extreme winners. Yeah. Extreme winners, that ego is hard.
Yeah, and
to
if I activate my ego, I'm gonna lose in life. Yeah. I'm gonna lose. I'm losing this cannabis. I'm gonna lose everything.
What if you like go jogging? Can you go jogging?
Nah, I do my treadmill work and stuff.
Oh, okay, treadmill. That's it.
But if I start to think that I'm special, if I get a glimmer of that thing, say, hey, whoa, yeah. Look at you. You're better than them.
I saw a video of you hitting the bag recently. It was like a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You still hit the bag?
Not anymore.
You still throw some bombs?
I do probably for the camera and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's what you were doing. But I'm like, damn, you can still move. You still have it in you, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
But it's in your body.
It has to be in... I don't want none to do
that.
But
does it feel weird? But what I was going to get to, if you are standing in front of that heavy bag and you start rattling off combinations, and you start thinking like, oh shit, I'm actually Mike Tyson. Like, I was that guy. I am that guy who went through that. I am the youngest heavyweight champion of all time. I am that guy that destroyed Tyrell Biggs. I am that guy that knocked out Larry Holmes. I'm that guy.
I look at that guy and somebody has given me a platform to help me forget about that guy.
Wow. Yeah. It's beautiful that you have that mindset. It is, because most people who've accomplished as much as you have, they don't want to ever let the past go.
Oh, shit, let that go. Let it go.
But do you recognize that? That's a beautiful part of your personality. You had one of the most successful boxing careers ever, but you don't want nothing to do with it. You want to acknowledge it exists. You wish it went away.
In order to arrive to that next chapter in life, you have to forget the chapter that came before you.
Yeah.
And focus on the chapter ahead of you.
Yes. Yes. That's a great lesson. And from coming from you, that lesson, I think, is going to hit home with a lot of people.
You think so?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Because you accomplished so much. Because you were the youngest heavyweight champion of all time. Because you're the baddest man on the planet. This big hero for a lot of people like me when I was growing up. To see you now say, that's then. I'm done. I don't watch it. I don't work out it. I'm not even a part of that anymore. I'm concentrating on my life right now, and I'm happy, and I love people.
You know, Joe, that's really crazy. But when you think about this, listen, you know, being that person, that guy, that sent me to psych ward a couple of times. That sent me to so many other places, to prison. That sent me places. That guy is a trip.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
That guy had you in underwear holding a tiger on a chain.
Yeah, that's a trip, man.
What did you go to the psych ward for?
It's been crazy, violent. Probably thought about hurting myself or something crazy like that.
What do they do when they take you in the psych ward? How do they treat you?
I don't know. It's the same way everybody treat me. This is Mike and stuff.
No, but I mean, how do they take care of you? What do they do for you? I mean, how do they take Mike Tyson and calm
fucking,
him down?
Just give you some fucking pills, man.
That's
some Thorazines or something.
Yeah.
Zone you out. Be like a zombie. You're in your zombie swagger then.
Yeah. Yeah, that is what they do, huh?
Yeah.
Just calm you down medically, pharmaceutically.
It's a zombie. You're like a zombie. It's looking at television. Don't know what's going on. Well, you know what's going on, but you can't react to it.
Jesus. And then once they got you calmed down enough, they go, all right, you can go.
I don't know. I don't think I ever get calmed down enough. I didn't think it was time for me to go, and I had to go.
What is a day in the life of Mike Tyson like now? Like, what is a typical day
for you? I get up in the morning. I go to my office. My cannabis office, we do deals and we get investments. And I come home at 5 o'clock and I go see my kids, unless I stay at the office later. And I come home and I hang out with my wife and my kids. It's a really bizarre life. We stay in Newport Beach now.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
Really, It's very upscale. Nice. It's very upscale, but it's very quiet, too. Yeah. Not like Las Vegas at all.
No.
And then my daughter plays tennis up there, so we're pretty much situated up there. It's not like I said, baby, can't we move to Hollywood? She said, no, we can't go to Beverly Hills. No, because the tennis, all of her tennis requirements are here in Newport Beach, so we stay here.
Newport's nice, though. It's a good place. It's near the ocean. It's got clean air.
Yeah, we see the ocean. It's just It's just different for me.
I bet.
It's different.
Yeah. Did you like living in Vegas, though? Because the fights were there
Vegas.
All the time.
It was always crazy and everything. Yeah. The fights did bring great parties, though. You could always go to some great parties. So that was always great.
So you've settled into this business life, it seems like, pretty easily. Like, you seem to be enjoying yourself.
Hey, it's something that I want to do, and it's a fresh start. You know what I mean? I look, since doing the tour, my main objective and everything I've been embarking on and been involving myself with has all been because of a fresh start. I feel fresh. I feel new. I feel that nothing could stop me. Nothing could be in my way. And it's just an awesome feeling.
So this is from doing that one DMT experience just sent you into...
Well, I did it one time, but I did it many times that day.
Right.
You know, but yeah, this really... I don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure it out. But I've changed, but I just don't know how.
Yeah. I describe it for a lot of people, it's like resetting a computer. You reset a computer, you have a fresh new desktop. And there's only one folder on the desktop. And that folder says, my old bullshit.
This is, listen, stop. I'm saying to myself right now, sometimes I wonder, this new feeling that I'm possessing right now, is it a real feeling? Does this stuff really help? Or am I lying to myself again till the next moment, that next feeling come to do some drugs or to be with somebody else? What's really going on? Is that feeling going to come back? Because at this moment, that feeling feels like it's never coming back.
It can never come back if you decide that it's never coming back. But you have to make that decision pretty much every day. But you can never come back if you want. Or you could slip into the old ways. That's what a lot of people do. When a lot of people fall into drug addictions, relapsing, when they relapse, they're not physically addicted when they're relapsed. Obviously, they're clean. Mm-hmm. And then they decide to go back in. It's because there's comfort in those old patterns. Because this new way of life is just, they get anxiety. They feel like it's a lot of pressure to stay clean.
Oh, so explain it. I hate that. I always hated that. Oh, wait, I never wanted to do drugs. But then I do them again. Yeah. I never wanted to. I hate it. No.
Yeah.
No, come on. You understand what I'm saying? No, I don't want.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't want that. And once you do that, then you're going all out now. You got the liquor there, the girl. Oh, man. This is a dark, dark, vicious cycle. It's real dark.
Yeah. It's self-destructive. Real dark,
yeah. It's all about ego inflating and self-deprecating, self-destruction.
It also alleviates you from the responsibility of improving.
100%.
That pressure of like keeping it together, staying sober, you know, being disciplined, all that stuff. Once it's gone, it's gone. Like, I'm just fucking crazy. I'm crazy. This is just what I do. I'm crazy. And it's easy to fall into that trap. And that's what happens to a lot of people who relapse with drugs.
I never want to go back to that again. That's just a no-win situation.
That's one of the great things about marijuana that people don't understand. They think that a drug is a drug is a drug. They're all falling under the same category. But you can use marijuana and just be peaceful and not chaotic and the opposite. It'll make you think more about the consequences of ruining your life.
Can I say something ridiculous? I fought in Detroit, Michigan one time. I fought Andrew Galata. I tested for marijuana. They charged me $300,000.
Jesus Christ.
Find me $300,000.
That's a lot of money. Where'd that money go? Who took it?
The commission.
They broke it up.
Yeah.
They chopped it up and went and did coke with it. That's what they did. Yeah. That's crazy. $300,000 for some weed in your system. Now you're selling it legally.
Yeah. And this is just a bizarre situation. I'm just going with this bizarre world and see what happens.
It's beautiful, man.
I never thought you could do this, sell marijuana. I never thought I'd be in that business.
I know.
At this stage of my life, when it came at the right particular time.
I saw it online. I saw Tyson Ranch online. I saw something on Instagram or something. And I was like, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Why not, man? In this day and age, I mean, look, everybody loves you. Why not go into business?
Hey, people never dreamt it, but it's just a no-brainer.
People are going to want to buy your weed just because they love you.
I want to distribute all over the world, too.
That's where it gets sketchy.
Yeah.
There's some spots in Asia you don't want to bring weed to.
No.
Singapore, well, you can get killed.
I know about that. Yeah. But there's some parts of the world that they accept it.
Yeah.
Like, I went to Europe to buy weed before. I mean, and it was, they were selling the plant. They weren't selling the bud. They were selling the plant. You had to buy the plant and wait till the plant develop and make buds and all that stuff.
Wow.
Selling the plant. I said, what is that? I said, what's that purpose?
They wanted you to grow your own.
Yeah.
That's the only way. So you were working with a bunch of different growers. Explain how you guys are setting it up.
The whole thing, we're working with other growers, but my main objective is to be distributors all over the country.
So, too, and also the ranch where you're going to have like a destination.
That's going to be our resort in there, and that's where people are going to come. It's going to be like what's that big concert thing? So we're going to have our own concerts there. It's Chinchilla. I forgot the name of
Coachella.
It. Coachella. Yeah.
Chinchilla.
Coachella. It's going to be something to that effect, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're going to do shows down there, too?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh,
we're
wow.
going to do Miguel. Miguel's going to be our first show.
When?
Miguel's going to be our first show in February.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's amazing. That's beautiful. But listen, man, I'm very happy for you. I'm happy to see this. I'm happy to see this transition in you. I'm happy to hear about your experiences. And good luck, man. Best
you need
luck.
To come by because I'm going to be presenting at the Podcast Award.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's coming up soon, isn't
it? Yeah, you going to be there?
No, I'm not going to be there.
Well, I'm gonna,
no, when is that?
Beat the hell out of me. They'll tell me.
Yeah, I think, do you know when that is, Jamie? Somebody sent it to me. I'm busy that night, unfortunately. Yeah. So you have a podcast, too. Tell people about that.
Yeah, it's called Hot Boxing.
Hot Boxing.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah, big time.
Hot Box, weed, get it? Boxing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And we smoke on our show, and we're having a good time.
Yeah, and you had Dale Earnhardt Jr. on?
Yeah, he's an awesome guy.
He's a great guy?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Did you get high with him?
No, I don't believe I did. No, I don't think he smoked.
No, I don't think he does either. But
he's such a clean-cut guy.
He's a super nice guy. Almost too nice. You're like, are you real?
Father was a tough guy.
Yeah. His father was a savage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell people, Tyson Branch... Tell people how they can find more information.
Well, you can look up Tyson Ranch.
Just is it TysonRanch.com?
Yep.
Okay. TysonRanch.com. And you don't fuck with any social media, huh? You don't mess with that. So,
I have people do that, but they tell me to take a picture of this guy for you to get some likes or something.
Yeah.
That's so immature. I feel like I'm in third grade or something, getting friends, trying to make friends. I don't know what the hell I'm going. I feel like a smuck, man.
It is ridiculous.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like a smuck.
That's it. Tyson Ranch official on Instagram.
Look, Daniel, I'm on the book, Dope Magazine. Cover.
There you go. Damn. Well, listen, brother, thank you very much for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure being here. I wanted to come to the show so much earlier, but we just couldn't make it happen.
We'll do it again. We'll do it again. And let me know when everything opens up. We'll be happy to promote it for you, let everybody know. And anytime you got something coming on, you want people to know about it, let me know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care,
appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much. Mike Tyson, motherfuckers.
All day.
Woo!
That was cool.